everyone. Welcome to This Week in Lies, the show where we try to reverse party political spin, expose bad journalism, and hopefully have a laugh, because if we didn't, we'd cry. Joining me this week, as usual, are my co-hosts Adam.
Hello.
And David.
Hello.
Yes, so this is episode 3, isn't it, I think, of the third series?
1, 2, 3. It's three.
I can count. Just some housekeeping as in general, if you do hear any bumps and bangs and interference and anything.
It's ghosts, because it's Halloween.
Is it Halloween?
No.
Almost, isn't
almost.
It?
Almost. Yeah, so if you hear anything like that, apologies as usual. There's building work going on at Bailrig FM, so maybe some interference, slightly. So, first story of the week, guys. Let's move on to it.
Eurozone failure.
Well, this is basically the fallout from last week's story where we talked about Greece, which is the huge amount of debt that they have. And the Eurozone finally reached an agreement. One of the facets of the agreement was that banks holding Greek debt will now accept a 50% write-off. Essentially, they've just halved their future capital back coming back from Greece, which is pretty amazing.
They make enough money, I suppose.
Essentially, the whole package, the move is expected to help cut the national debt to around 120% of its GDP, you know, pretty good numbers, by 2020.
What?
Instead of 180, you know. But basically, most banks, you know, reluctant banks had initially offered 40% write-off, which they called a haircut. Yeah. But a deal was finally agreed after Angela Merkel and Nicolas Sarkozy joined direct negotiations on the issue.
Yeah, how painful a haircut would that be? Worse haircut than Ronaldo at the 2002 World Cup.
So the main bailout fund, shaking hands there for that brilliant football-related joke. Yeah. The main power coming from it is from the European Financial Stability Facility, the EFSF, and that's been boosted up from 440 billion euros to a trillion euros.
It sounds like we're just getting to that figure now where it's like, you know, Dr. Evil on the moon, I want 1 billion trillion. We're just gonna have to make up numbers.
Literally just throwing money at the problem. There's about another 250 billion euros left to the EFSF, which the summit statement said could be leveraged 4 or 5 times. So essentially, if you're into banking and things like that, you know what leveraging is. It's
pretty depressing.
Yeah. Both of the things mean that something. What's that say? Honestly, that's just poor reporting. Sorry. The framework of the new increased fund should be placed in November. There's just a random, useless line there in the script. So apologies. European banks will now be required to raise about 106 billion euros in new capital by June 2012, and it's hoped that this new package should help shield Greece from going bankrupt.
So essentially, we need to raise a bit of money. So how can we raise some money? Fish, we could have a cake sale. The EU could do a sponsored run.
Hummus sale.
Yeah. That could raise some money for Greece. Or we could just sell a massive supply of weapons to Gaddafi. Oh, wait a minute, we got rid of him. Who could we sell weapons to now?
Not sure. Not really many options around these days.
Are we friends of Syria still?
No.
We friends of Iran?
No.
We friends of Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, sort of.
Oh, we'll just sell weapons to them, it's fine. We'll raise enough money.
Yeah. I've got a new plan, which is basically ban all numbers above a billion. You can't get into trouble this day.
So what, are we doing
it makes it a lot easier.
Wouldn't they just then say, we'll have 1 billion and another and another?
No, you can't spend over 1 billion because no numbers exist above that. Maybe they're getting confused by the amount of zeros. I thought if you condense it a little bit, it may just be simpler.
Or maybe it wouldn't look as bad if all the zeros had smiley faces in them.
Yeah.
It'd look a lot happier. So, you know, you'd look at all your debt and go, oh, they're all smiling.
I think my co-hosts have radically misjudged economics in general.
Well,
this is the kind of approach that the Zimbabwean bank took by just saying, well, we'll just scribble out a few zeros on the currency and it will be fine.
Yeah, but it's the point I've said to you before. We lost a load of imaginary money and they have this imaginary money debt. So why don't we just say the imaginary money didn't exist in the first place? Or that we found this imaginary money?
There are so many things wrong with that statement that I can't begin to tell you why.
Or we could just... Or you'll love this link. We could just look down the back of the couch. A bit like what Germany did.
which is frankly quite an amazing little story. So go ahead.
This is amazing. Germany has found 55 billion euros. No, that's quite a lot of money now to find, which you don't think you have, after it discovered an accounting error at Hypo Real Estate. This troubled bank had to nationalise in 2009.
I just want to know who's been doing the books that they accidentally wrote off 55 billion euros.
Probably Goldman Sachs. They got greedy into the euro. The country now expected ratio of debt to GDP to be 81.1% for 2011, 2.6 percentage points lower than previously forecast, the finance ministry in Germany said. The miscalculation was at the so-called bad bank of HREFMS Wirt Management.
Probably money management.
They should speak English.
Management.
The discovery was made early this month, but only announced on Friday.
I think they've probably been double-checking everything, just going, really? We missed 55 billion euros? I knew the things didn't add up that well.
It's probably been the elephant in the room. It's like, there's something here, I'm not quite sure what I'm missing. It's that, it's that big lump
this
of money.
This column says that we're missing 55 billion. And, we'll leave it, lads, we'll leave it.
They've obviously just, they saw the 55 billion and never put them two together. The 55 billion that they had and the 55 billion that they were missing. They're perfectly normal to do, I suppose. But
it's not really a surprise this bank was nationalised at some point.
Yeah, not really, but Germany, sort your act out.
Seriously, get a new accountant. They can't even do T graphs to just make sure that your in and out column should equal, essentially.
That's going to be the world's biggest couch to lose 55 billion, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm also worried by that 81.1% debt to GDP, and they're supposed to be one of the strongest economies in
not
the world.
Not as bad as Greece yet.
Yeah, but that's still quite worrying.
Considering Britain's is pretty high as well.
Essentially, everyone should change to monopoly money.
I reckon everyone should go back to bartering cows and sheep.
I'll give you 2 pigs for that hat, sir.
Our economy is worth 10 million sheep.
Why do we even need these items, these materialistic items, man? It's disgraceful.
Free love and all that.
Not sure Ringo Starr. What is going on here?
So, closer to home again rather than Europe.
Funding parties! Not the fun kind, the political kind. News.
Very nicely done.
It's a terrible, terrible link.
You know what? There's a recession on.
We had to cut back on the announcers. The script writers. We had to sack them. So basically this is about party funding in the UK, which is, political parties and how they spend their campaign money and how they get their campaigning money. And the plans to give an increase in state funding worth up to £100 million over the 5 years of the Parliament. And that's been proposed by a government commissioned inquiry into party funding. The funding which would be shared out according to the number of votes each party receives in a general election would be presented as a way of compensating them for a huge loss of income as a result of introducing new caps on individual donations to the party. Now, the one party that really doesn't like this legislation...
Who would that be?
The Tories.
Why wouldn't they like this legislation?
They have argued that the £50,000 cap on individual donations to their party would see them lose as much of a third of their income. So essentially, 33% roughly of all their donations are from people who donate £50,000 and £1. It's like £50,000 and one pence more. So essentially, single donations of more than £50,000 account for a third of their party funding.
Wow.
And we all know the stat about Barack Obama, how he got a lot of $1 donations and $50 donations. The Tories are now complaining that their £50,000 donations are not enough.
A man offshore can't just shovel money into their account.
Yeah. Can't just out of the back of a car with a spade, just dumping money in there.
Oh, Lord Ashcroft.
We use Adam Haynes, don't we? So the state funding idea has been pushed hardest by the Liberal Democrats, who currently have the least independent income, wonder why, and are likely to benefit the most from the proposals. The party has recently had to lay off staff and even had to sell its headquarters to cut costs.
Where did they meet? Just in an alley down the back?
A small cafe in the middle of London.
It's what happens in that cafe in... in The Apprentice. When The Apprentice isn't on, the Lib Dems have their conferences.
Nick Clegg and Min Campbell there having a coffee.
Yeah, you just see arguments where like Vince Cable's like, I didn't want sugar in my tea, I'm leaving.
Nick Clegg's been so used to putting sugar in everyone's tea.
And he probably didn't pay VAT on that coffee he bought as well.
The draft report is proposing that parties receive funding worth about £3 a vote they receive. So on the basis of the last election, the Tories would get £32 million, Labour £25.8 million, and Lib Dems £20.4 million. But the figure could be higher if tax relief was added in the future.
Wow.
So what do you think?
It's kind of making a bad idea of an already ridiculously bad idea. So at the moment, you know, Labour obviously get a lot of money from the trade unions. The Lib Dems get no money at all. Yeah. The Tories are actually, you know, getting a lot of money off of, right, don't distract me from that message. Tories obviously are funded by Ashcroft, so.
And very large single donations.
And insane people who give them £8 million. Because which they think Thatcher protects people from the devil.
Yes. We'll probably bring that story up in
which the is moment. Ironic because she is.
I'm not exactly against it that much. I mean, as a. We rag on the Americans quite a lot, but their system is ridiculous. Patently ridiculous. I mean, how can you spend $1 billion like Obama did? That's such an epic waste of money.
If you funneled that into something useful, other than just saying, vote for me, vote, you know, you could do a lot more.
There was a statistic on the BBC that I read that if all the money spent by all the parties in the last general election was spent in America, they could get a 4-minute, 15-second advert in 2 states.
All right, then.
Yeah.
And so I suppose it's not as bad as America.
Yeah. It also takes away a bit of outside influence. Like, you wouldn't see people in, like, in the Senate in America who stand up just to say, oh, I love the great tasting chocolate of Mars, I couldn't get up in the morning without it, and then just sit back down.
Obviously, there are other types of chocolate you can buy.
Very tiring, that rule. As I've said before, anything we say product placement wise, we're not endorsing it. Stop it.
We are probably slagging it off, to be fair, but this is just ridiculous. We're having a go at how we want to fund our parties, and America is probably the country that needs to do this the most. Really. But the Tories need to sort this out. What are they going to do about Ashcroft?
Probably don't think this will come into power in the full effect of what it is at the moment.
There's only going to be Lib Dems voting for it, and they have, like, what, 2 MPs? So no one's going to vote for it?
2 MPs.
Well, it's pretty much
they haven't defected.
Yeah. It shows how fair the voting system is as well. The Lib Dems wouldn't get that much less money than the other parties, yet they have so many fewer MPs.
Mm.
It seemed eye-opening. Or eye-catching, actually.
Stop making a logical point. It's not how we play this game.
They don't deserve money for what they did.
Obviously, the views of Ben Farnworth, I may agree with them.
I like the Lib Dems.
Yeah, because you get to give me rubbish for it. Yeah.
So, should we move on to our first song?
Yes, we shall.
We've delightfully chosen this week ahead of time, so we're not scrambling to do it. And it's another one, Bites the Dust by Queen.
Bob Gaddafi.
Is it?
I don't know.
I don't know if he was alive when they first wrote the song.
He probably was.
Once again, the computer decides not to play the jingle.
Oh, you've still not figured out how to use that, have you?
I think I have to put it in 2 different beds. I think that's what it is. I'll try that next time.
Epic fail.
It is a bit confusing. Apologies. I don't know why they changed it.
Yeah.
But
we like the old system.
Yeah. And now we're going to talk about a medal. An Empire medal. Which has divided the This Week in Lies team somewhat.
Some of Star Wars reference probably incoming. Can predict this one?
Nope.
No? Oh. Well,
I didn't think about that, actually.
Joy.
No. Go ahead. Don't plan ideas in this head, please. Yeah. David Cameron is basically, he wants to reinstate the British Empire Medal, which was scrapped by John Major in 1993. On the grounds that it was out of date and entrenched class divisions. It was established in 1917 for people not of rank, unlike the OBE and MBE, which are awarded personally by the Queen of or Prince of Wales. The BEM is awarded by a local lieutenant. It's basically to Cameron wants it to reward sort of people who do stuff in their local communities.
So, like,
and
volunteering.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
And basically, this is seen as an attempt to revive the Big Society initiative, which is not exactly caught the public's imagination.
Falling a little flat.
Yeah.
At least a little bit flat.
Fallen on deaf ears.
Well, seeing as the guy who was meant to be doing it had to resign because he didn't have the time to do it because he couldn't afford not to be paid to do work.
Sort of pointing out all the major flaws in one news story, I suppose.
So, first of all, what are your major objections to this?
Well, it's a little bit funny, but it's called the Empire Medal, just because there's like a little image in my head of someone going, "I got India back for us," and then David Cameron coming and going, "Well done."
It also ties into his image. You could see him doing quite well in Imperial England, and if he went on a trade mission to India, you could imagine him going, "Show me to the local tigers, I need a new rug."
But it's essentially just making the Big Society global. He wants to take over the world. That's essentially what it is.
So I didn't like this story, really. Well, I didn't think it was that amazing.
By you not liking it, would you say screaming at us to try and get it out of the script, and then Tom Jassy getting so annoyed and not actually listening to the points we made?
We had an irate discussion at the Twill headquarters, and basically I thought, why is it a problem that it's still called the Empire Medal?
It's just because so
we're still ruled by an undemocratic...
It's more who he is and who the Conservatives are.
But we're still ruled by an undemocratic monarchy and an unelected House of Lords and things like that, so I think there's more things to get worried about.
Part of the article says, the move may come as a surprise to some conservatives after Major scrapped the medal in 1993 on the grounds that it was out of date and entrenched class divisions. Now, when the Tories see something as out of date, you know it's old. Like, they've only probably just let go of, like, the 1500s. So, come on. I don't understand.
I think it's a great initiative, and it helps local people be respected for the things that they do in their local community.
We're not actually against the medal as a whole.
If it was called the Volunteers Medal or the Local Society Award, something different, would you be happier then?
I'm not unhappy that it's called the Empire Medal. I just find it quite mildly amusing because of who the Conservatives are. And most of them were probably around when the Empire was still going.
Well, in the Lords especially.
Yeah. And also the fact that for the Big Society, David Cameron's sort of like a 13-year-old kid who got £100 haircut. And nobody has noticed, so he's just going round going, when I went to the barber's the other day to get my hair cut, please notice me. Please notice me. I'm not getting a Christmas present because of this.
What a brilliant analogy. Sadly, I've never known anyone who had a £100 haircut.
No.
Well, David, the length of yours probably would cost about £100 to get a cut.
Probably, yeah.
In late, just pure man hours.
I am looking forward to the next time he has to relaunch this, of what he's going to bring out. Because this will fail. This won't happen. So anything that happens at the Big Society ultimately fails. But
he'll bring back Dig for Victory. You know,
the Women's Land Army. Yeah,
Europe are invading our crop fields. Dig for Victory.
Some of the rhetoric he's come up with in the past couple of weeks about Europe probably is him slowly bringing it back.
The CAP is an imperialist force from Europe, and we will stop it by growing our own vegetables and not putting them into the common market.
Just give me a minute.
Should we move on then? From his imperialist European directives. So Adam, this is your story. You put this one into the fray. So
this is
this is more depressing.
Yeah, after we've just had a good laugh about David Cameron, this is genuinely just depressing. So you can ring 999, obviously, hope that you're going to get some help, but a Metropolitan Police officer working in an emergency call centre bungled pleas for help from people reporting rape, domestic abuse and gun crime. The officer has been sacked after an investigation. The Independent Police Complaints Commission said... adding that he had left some calls in potentially dangerous situations. The officer, aged 58, was found to have altered the last digit of the phone number provided by callers to the 999 emergency number on 7 occasions. The IPCC said the officer, based at the Emergency Call Handling Centre in Bow, East London, bungled 141 calls out of the 3,000 he handled between the 1st of May and 26th of July 2009. An investigation found that his handling of 19 calls amounted to gross misconduct, and that the officer had failed to provide a police response to domestic abuse, assault, rape, a suicide threat, potential arm breakings, and a road traffic collision.
Did anyone... Was there any...
No fatalities, I don't think.
No, I don't think there's fatalities, but it's still quite bad.
Yeah.
The officer's misconduct only came to light by chance as well. In a statement, the IPC said that the investigation began in August 2009 after issues relating to the PC's performance first came to light when a woman dialed 999 to report a domestic abuse on the 26th of July. After several attempts trying to spell her last name, she just ended the call in frustration because she was trying to report a domestic abuse case, and he just, for some reason, could not spell her last name, even though she was giving him each individual letter.
I don't think it really matters. If you're calling 999, you shouldn't need to know your last name. Where are you? What's the problem? Okay, we'll send someone out right away.
Well, the officer involved closed the call log and failed to provide a police response to the call. The woman caller later brought her experience to the attention of a family friend who happened to be a call handler working at the same command centre. A supervisor was informed and the call identified and reviewed, and the police officer was removed from answering 999 calls pending a detailed analysis of his previous performances.
It's quite worrying that it was all discovered by chance then.
Yeah.
You'd have thought they'd have a review of these kind of things, surely.
This is the kind of story that you'd see on the front page of a newspaper where someone then later dies because of the incompetence, and that's normally sometimes that's what brings out these kind of incompetent staff or handling or procedures, so
yeah,
best of a bad situation, I guess, would be the way to sum it up, is that no one had to lose their life or whatever, anything as serious to get the problem fixed, but
it's still just that.
You would hope that this won't happen again, because the last thing you want to think when you call 999 is, oh, they might not send someone.
Police cuts, they might not anymore, we haven't got the money to afford police cars. They'll probably have to walk around there, and by the time you got around there, you've already been murdered or something.
Bright thoughts.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what we like to do on Twill. Brighten your sad evenings.
I'm genuinely depressed now.
Yeah, you do have to wonder exactly what he thought he was in 999 for, exactly.
Oh.
If not to respond for... Just to incidents.
This is just a bad story in general, and...
Especially altering the digits of phone numbers. If someone gives you a number, well, I imagine when they ring up on the screen, it says,
it would come give
the
number.
Caller is, and then gives their number. How hard is it to read a script? Actually, that's a completely unreasonable question to hope that someone working in an important area of the police could write down a thing off of a screen.
Can we move on?
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Can we move on?
I'm genuinely depressed. Let's get on to something which is such a nothing story, but quite amusing.
We're talking about benefit fines, or potential benefit fines, I suppose. And the government are proposing that people who fail to pay their fine after being convicted for criminal behaviour could lose up to £25 a week in benefits. David Cameron said the measure was being introduced as a deterrent, adding that the current system was too soft. At the moment, people who fail to pay the fine on time can have £5 a week deducted from their benefit payments. Labour said it supported moves to make people pay for their crimes, whether they're on benefits or not. The increase will start in 2013 when the universal credit comes into force. And Ian Duncan Smith said the summer riots showed that many people did not think about the consequences of their behaviour.
It's quite funny about people not think about the consequences of their behaviour, especially like in the riots, because, you know, we might just have a country which is full of idiots, fools and delinquents who have nothing else better to do. And plus, obviously, to say, oh, it's because of people who don't think about their consequences, a little bit of, you know, narrowing the reasons for that riot. But if George Osborne thought about what he was doing, then I'm sure the economy would be doing a lot better.
Oh, boom.
Swish.
Ian Duncan Smith went on to say that losing a significant amount of their benefits will make people who cause trouble feel the full effect of their actions. The PM and I were clear that we'd look at all parts of the benefit system and ensure that people feel the full effect of their actions. Yes, that's exactly what I just said in the sentence before.
So essentially, the main crux of the story is, if you're on benefits and then you have a fine, you don't pay it, you have to pay the fine?
Yeah.
But through small, manageable payments.
Which you can already do anyway.
Benefits.
Yep.
Okay.
So we just wasted about 2.5 minutes of
that
time?
No. Well, yeah, but it's good to... Good idea to talk about the kind of thing is that why do people commit crime? Now, you can obviously say some people are just...
Idiots.
Yeah, and want to commit crimes and just want to steal or whatever. They're born that way, or it's an economic situation, or it's a social situation. So is the best thing, really, to make people who already are in dire economic straits then take more money off them as a form of punishment?
Yeah, and it ties in with the Conservatives and David Cameron saying, I know that for... pretty much for definite what the reason for the riots were. And he's just like, you can't possibly know how every individual person responded to that. And I'm actually going to agree with what Tony Blair said afterwards in a shocking move.
Wash yourself in bleach after this.
And he said you need to investigate the root causes for like every individual families, because obviously everyone's situation is different.
Using the
different.
Old rhetoric, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime.
Which Gordon Brown wrote that.
Rather than... tough on people who are already poor.
Yeah.
Tough on people you are quite easy to pick on.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough on people who can't defend themselves.
Yeah. It does seem to be the crux, especially with all this scrounger kind of rhetoric. It's just...
You could go,
people leeching off this country, these tax evaders, like at the high level, but never that kind of language is ever used.
It's never Lewis Hamilton should come back and pay tax. It's always the people at the bottom taking benefits.
Well, he's also come out and said that crime should never pay. And it's like, well, it doesn't unless you're in, like, the mafia maybe or something and, you know, you're money laundering. You usually get caught if, you don't have a policeman like we had in the previous story.
Yeah.
But it's just the amount of rhetoric around this actual issue of going, oh, well, you know, it's people who are on benefits who are committing crimes. It's like, was it really all of them?
It's essentially like Greece. The amount of... tax evasion in that country has probably made them as bad as they are today. You know, it's not... If Greece were then to turn around and say, it's the people at the bottom who are taking too much money in benefits, you'd be like, well, wait, there's like 300,000 people not paying tax or whatever. So it's pretty rich, and I also think a little naive to just boil it down purely to... lower end rather than at the top.
Are you finding, as we do this show more and more, that politicians tend to play the Daily Mail game?
Yes.
Yeah, they just boil things down to really simple things that can be put in a newspaper and used to bandy about quite a lot.
Or then throw it to an absurd conclusion and then say that that is true.
Yeah. You need to look at, like, the wider picture, because there's always a lot of reasons for why people do everything.
Again, I'm getting depressed. Can we play a song?
Yeah. Can we have an upbeat song?
Well, I chose a pretty cool song that I like. Me and Dave both like this one, and it's.
How do you know I don't like it?
Well, I don't know. Do you like Hendrix?
Yeah, I do.
Everyone likes Hendrix. This is Jimi Hendrix with All Along the Watchtower. Oh, finally got it. That's how it works, guys. We've got it now. The show will be much more professional, I hope.
Congratulations.
The Pep Guardiola celebration there in the background. So, we're going to move on to Ireland.
Yes. Something which isn't actually depressing.
Well, no, it isn't. Because the poet, peace campaigner and president of Galway United Football Club, Michael D. Higgins, is poised to become Ireland's next president after rivals conceded defeat in the most fractious, is that, campaign in the country's history.
Can you read today?
I can, but that's just a word that I've very rarely seen. Apologies. The Irish Labour Party candidate was in course to win at least 40% of the first preference vote. Of the first 8 constituencies to declare, Higgins was leading in 7 of them. The 70-year-old enjoyed a late surge of support, putting him well ahead of the former frontrunner, Sean Gallagher. Martin McGuinness, whose candidacy turned into the spotlight on his past as the IRA's chief of staff, and his role in many prominent atrocities during the Troubles, was almost certain to come third.
Well, everyone thought that Sean Gallagher was going to win, and then it turned out in the last presidential debate that he'd been given money by certain, let's say, not very desirable figures of companies for a photo, and not declared it, as it was pretty much funding his campaign. But to get around funding laws, they said, oh, we're paying for photos, and it's like, you're not really the lawyer. You're not doing that at all. So he kind of got made look quite silly on TV. He got paid up to £5,000 for one of them.
For one photo?
For a photo.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Not suspicious at all.
No. Quite a clever way of getting around party funding rules.
Yeah. I'm disappointed Martin McGuinness didn't get back in, because it would certainly bring politics back with a bang.
No, the Troubles jokes just aren't going to work today, mate. Sorry. I like that they called him the IRA's chief of staff.
That's like it was some sort of legitimate organisation with elections and the like. Well, I'm chief of staff, you know, my jurisdiction here.
I just work in HR.
Yeah. My role is to organise the staff, tell them where to bomb and who to shoot in kneecaps.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm worried that I've just said that on air. Martin McGuinness is going to come and get me.
I just love how one of them was called McGuinness, and the man called McGuinness could have been president of Ireland.
You sound ridiculous, McGuinness. We're calling you IRA.
It's almost too ironic.
That is not one we're going to win. I'm sorry, but we are not going to be able to beat them. Yeah,
Dave's calling you out, IRA. Yeah. We're not.
They're peaceful these days.
Me and Adam, we don't support them. We can't say we support them, so they don't get us. Let's just get off this topic. We don't like them.
No. Would you like a rope to get out of that incredibly deep hole?
I'm just going to keep digging, because then I'll get through to the other side.
Yeah. I like the fact that the guy in charge is now a poet as well. Just have him standing up in Parliament going, I'd like to compare our economic troubles to that of the lark flying south for the winter. Not again!
Just long monologues in Parliament. I've prepared a short prose for today's debate, and I hope you all sit quietly and listen, okay?
You make everyone sit round in a circle, you know.
Story time, children.
To be fair, though, it's not really a big role being the President of Ireland. That's not, you know, having a go. It's mainly ceremonial, but at least the guy who hasn't killed anyone got in, so I'm quite happy.
Yet.
He's a peace campaigner! Why are you making him to sound evil? Please don't, I like him. He's a nice guy. He's also 70. He's 70.
A little old.
Yeah.
Should we move on to
Arab Spring news now?
Boing.
The Arab League, who we haven't mentioned quite a lot, which is quite weird when we're talking about the Arab Spring, has finally found its phone. And sent an urgent message to the Syrian government denouncing the continued killing of civilians. Do you reckon they should have maybe denounced the starting of the killing of civilians? But the League's Ministerial Committee on the Syrian Crisis also urged that Damascus take necessary measures to protect civilians. So, you know, make sure that they shoot them so the alleged terrorists, i.e. revolutionaries, don't shoot them. But we haven't heard any more ridiculous things about, you know, people being shot at, not being, you know, shot towards.
Well, Gaddafi isn't around anymore, so the funny has been sucked out of the situation.
We need something to happen in Iran to make this happier, but the call has come after at least 37 protesters were killed in Syria, activists have said. The death took place mostly in Homs and Hama, as protesters call for a no-fly zone to be imposed on activists. And activists are obviously still out on the streets. More than 3,000, yes, 3,000, with three happy smiley faces, zeros.
Three.
I think they're more sad faces.
Yeah, they're quite depressed faces. Have died in the unrest since protests broke out in March. And the international community is being as proactive as sloth is of answering the question of whether string theory or lukewarm gravity explains the behaviour of the universe.
Well, we all know it's string theory.
No, it's obviously gravity.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not having this debate with you again.
But yes.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's the Arab League, which contains Saudi Arabia, who are now going, you shouldn't be mean to the people who are in your country.
After
only women. Only women.
The Arab League really has no credibility. I am going to put that out there.
I thought the Arab League was the football league. Arab Conference?
Where have they been? Have you heard anything from them throughout this crisis?
Also, just the use of the word league seems very outdated. Like, the League of Evil, you know. It's like, we are the Arab League.
Would you prefer them to be the Legion?
The Legion, yeah.
Yeah, all your credibility in the Arab League basically rests on the fact whether you have oil or not.
Yeah.
Whether America will leave you alone for long enough.
Obviously, Syria's still depressing, but Libya's wrapped itself up now. With British military personnel starting to return home from their Libyan mission after receiving a congratulations from the Defence Secretary for what he called a job well done after we bombed the wrong side twice.
I would say it's not really wrapped up as
such. Oh, well, it is. It is. The UN have said it's wrapped up.
Quite
so it must
a
be.
Lot of stuff to do there.
No, there's not.
Rebuilding a lot of bombed buildings.
No, the UN have said that it's over.
No, so it's over.
Okay. It's over.
Everything's fine.
It's a thriving liberal democracy now.
We're going to plant a tree. and everyone will be happy. And we will put a bench next to it and people can sit.
But Philip Hammond said the armed forces could be immensely proud that their hard work has assured the liberty of the Libyan people. See? It's sorted. They've got liberty.
Okay.
Thank you. He was speaking on a visit to an Italy base from where the RAF aircraft had been flying out. The drawdown follows NATO's decision to end its mission on the 31st of October and the fact that the UN have told them they have to.
And the fact that Gaddafi's now dead.
Yeah. I'm quite depressed that he's dead. I want to miss him. And some of his lunatic...
Not for any of his genocidal things. Just,
oh, no.
Just the pure comedy value of we will destroy the West with our many missiles that we don't have launching systems for.
Also his face.
Yeah. As I said, Eddie Van Halen has been spotted hanging around mostly in Libya face-melting solos.
It's not Gaddafi's fault, his favourite song is Eruption.
Yeah. It's like, ah!
But, yeah. Talking about Gaddafi's, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, who is the son of the slain ex-Libya, has he said he's innocent of crimes against humanity. The ICC, their prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo, has said talks with him have been held, but he's pretty much just denied being involved in crimes against humanity whatsoever.
He was asleep.
Yeah. Not at all. Took part in genocide.
There's nothing like on tape in interviews which says he backs his dad in all ways.
Have there been any pictures of him in a pickup truck with a machine gun? Wait a minute. Oh yeah, there have.
Did he carry on a golden? Oh,
he did. Wow, his case is not very watertight, is it? Not that great.
He could stand up given the right lawyer.
Is he still hiding? Do we know where he is yet?
But they say he's going towards Niger. But if they know this, why can't they just
wait
stand
the
on the road and just be like, stop,
you're
and take him out?
You're assuming there's only one road in. Are you making some form of reference to African infrastructure that you would like to share?
Not really.
Yeah.
Maybe it was implied.
You imperialist.
To be fair, though, we actually are relying on Niger to go, no, you're a genocidal maniac. We're not. Oh, wait a minute, their leader's a genocidal maniac. Why is everyone in Africa either a dictator or a rubbish leader? Why can't we rely on Niger to actually deport him?
Not everyone.
Well, I mean, the leaders. Sorry, I'm angry at this because we still haven't got him.
Not all the leaders.
I'm going to refer back to a word we used before, which was empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But we've got to find him.
There are a lot of graduates of the Idi Amin School of... politics.
We've inverted commas very much around the politics. But
as we all know, Gaddafi was a head lecturer there. So.
Ahmadinejad, the guest one.
He used to wear tweed jackets with leather patches before his face got melted because Van Halen wasn't around yet.
Hugo Chavez, who was like class clown.
This is depressing. To be fair, though, I'm happy that this show is still keeping the Arab Spring going.
I think sometime when we miss 1 week, if we ever have to, you know, miss a week of 12, the Irish thing will just stop and everyone will be like, eh.
Well, the world stopped when we're not on air anyway.
Yeah. No. But it needs to keep going to overthrow these regimes. I like to think some of them sitting at their laptops on a Saturday or a Sunday just going, oh, refresh iTunes. Oh, there it is. I've got the power to keep fighting now.
Other music buying thing sources are available.
Well done.
Yeah. What is it? A music service?
I don't know. But we should probably have a song before we go to something which is on the Daily Mail website. And sit ready for this.
Yeah.
If you have a seatbelt near you, put it on. It beats the Nazi banker.
So this song is from a band which Adam has a major crush on the lead singer.
That's awful.
Yes.
That is genuinely
thank you.
Awful.
It's Paramore with Crush.
Please direct yourself to the nearest door.
No. Smooth. Thank you.
Congratulations, you figured out how to use the system when we're on the third series.
They've changed it since, okay. Now everyone, brace yourself.
Europe at war, 2018. German troops storm Greece. Putin's tanks cross Latvia. France humbles the British army. Unlikely, yes, but as Angela Merkel says, Euro meltdown. could endanger peace. So apparently because the Euro's gone a bit, we're going to war. Now,
who is this written by?
This was written by Dominic Sendbrook, who has taken over from Peter Hitchin as my obsession for idiocracy, as I like to call it.
So this is a... What's a speculative piece on what Europe will be like in 2018?
I think it was just an actual imaginative piece of what the future should be like, creative but actually writing. In the main bit of the Daily Mail.
So it's creative writing that somehow is being masqueraded as news.
We will put this on the Twitter feed for you all to read and just die of laughter.
I would also say creative writing masquerading as news. Isn't that the entirety of the Daily Mail?
Yes!
Boom.
High five.
Well, I'm gonna read you a few extracts from this.
Okay.
The date is October 29th, 2018, when Britain faces its darkest hour. On the battlefields of Europe, our armed forces have been humiliated. In makeshift prison camps on the continent, thousands of our young men and women sit forlornly, testament to the collapse of our ambitions. From the killing grounds of Belgium to the scarred streets of Athens, the continent continues to bleed. And in the east, the Russian bear tightens its grip, an old empire rising from the wreckage of the European dream.
So is this a film that's coming out in the next couple of years?
No. No, it's genuinely not.
Is that a picture of Vladimir Putin with a military hat on?
Yes.
Yes. Taken to mean.
But I'm going to... Largely forgotten today, the main event was yet another interminable European summit in Brussels, the 14th attempt to save the Euros in scare quotes, in just 20 months, apparently. Hoping to secure German support for a massive 1 trillion euro rescue passage, Chancellor Angela Merkel gave her parliamentarians a chillingly prescient warning. No one should believe that another half century of peace in Europe is a given. It's not.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I say again, if the Euro collapses, Europe collapses, that cannot be allowed to happen.
Well, so that means surely she wants peace.
Yeah, and also, haven't they just pretty much saved the Euro?
So,
getting there, yeah. At least. They're not exactly they're just going to go, oh, it's sack it off now.
They're
it's
in
too
no
much
way effort. Leaving it to just die a horrible death.
On August the 12th, 2015... After days of fighting on the streets of Ruzha, the Russian army rumbled across the border. The Russians had come to restore order, Vladimir Putin assured the world. But his statement to the Russian people told a different story. Europe's crisis is Russia's opportunity, he said. The days of humiliation are over. Our empire will be restored. Once the West would have come to it, Latvia's aid. It was, after all, a member of both the European Union and of NATO. But the new American isolationism meant NATO membership was effectively worthless. But since French troops were already committed to Greece and Italy, Paris refused to intervene.
And in London,
the new Prime Minister, Ed Miliband, assured the nation that he would never commit British troops to help a faraway country of which we know nothing. Well, that's quite ironic that the Daily Mail is saying a faraway country they know nothing and commenting on the faraway country.
Plus, it's Latvia, it's not that far away. I've been there.
When Brussels complained, the Kremlin pointed out that the European peacekeepers were already on the streets of Athens, Rome and Madrid. Why, Putin asked, should the rules be any different in the East? And indeed, he had a point. Even in Paris, there was a chilling evidence of a slide towards ruthless suppression of civil dissent, justified as a short-term measure to check the rise of anti-capitalism terrorism. Apparently, Sarkozy and Putin then go on to make a deal to both own Russia... Russia from the east and France from the west, in a Napoleonic ambition.
So just using a blatant stereotype to back up his story. And
kind of like some sort of like drug territory. Like, you can have east, we'll have west, no one to cross the borders, you know the rules.
But then, essentially, as the article goes on, apparently the Dutch speakers in Belgium are intimidated out of their homes and the French beat them up. Essentially, every stereotype you could think about any European country is put into this. Berlusconi is still leading Italy in this. So it's not going to happen, don't
when
worry.
When Berlusconi sent in the army to maintain order, the first bombs began exploding in the banks of Rome, Milan and Turin. This guy should write movie scripts.
Seriously, he finishes it with this, just to quickly do it. The Union flag hangs tattered and forlorn. Our days of glory are long gone, and in Brussels, our new masters are preparing their victory.
Is this like a long roundabout way of some form of European...
If there was ever an article which was the Daily Mail's opinions of Europe, this is it.
Mm. Tank rolling down, like, the main highways in London.
Yeah.
And European flags flying from Buckingham Palace.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if Michael Bay hasn't already been in contact with...
No, they're going to get Peter Jackson.
It needs more explosions. And then everything will be fine. Yeah. More explosions.
Maybe like an explosion at a waffle factory in Belgium or something.
The Queen running out of the front door of like Buckingham Palace to have it explode in a million different directions.
But what would actually happen would be people would say, I've got nuclear weapons, you've got nuclear weapons, and let's not fire at each other. Or they'd say, oh, we're all dead. Because we fired nukes at each other.
Yeah.
And that's all that could happen.
But that story will be on the Twitter and Facebook pages for you to have a little look
at. Why don't you tell everyone about those, quickly?
Oh, yeah. Twitter is at This Week in Lies. So just type that in and you'll find us. And on Facebook, obviously, search This Week in Lies. It's not that hard.
And quickly now, 30 seconds before the end, news that wasn't reported this week, and it wasn't reported because it wasn't true.
I might have made it up.
Go ahead.
David, start with you.
Europe plans to stabilise the euro by invading UK. That's the Daily Mail.
Young people and foxes plan secret destruction of British morals. That's from the Daily Telegraph.
New roundabout created in Dorking. The envy of all local towns. From the Dorking Chronicle.
Capitalism is rubbish. Socialist worker.
Princess Diana revelations to be revealed in new book by Paul Burrell. That's in the Daily Express. And the news of the world was quiet yet again. But... We
missed the news bed quite badly.
We'll
see you next week, guys. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Civvies later!